Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Mike Sklenz.
And I am Evan Birchfield.
We gotta apologize first off last week for our technical difficulties, but I'm sure everyone enjoyed the interview with Johnny. I thought it was pretty good myself. Evan, congratulations on that.
Thank you. And I'll tell you what, Mike, it's been 2 weeks since we've had a real podcast, and I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this in front of everybody, but I have missed you.
Yeah, it hurt. I had trouble sleeping at night. I cried myself to sleep a couple times.
It's been just about the roughest 2 weeks that I can remember for me.
All right, so this week we're going to talk about a couple things. First on the list is Peter Moore from Microsoft, big Xbox, I guess, front man, except he's sort of behind Jay Allard. He doesn't have Xbox sneakers yet. he says that he thinks the novelty of playing games on the Wii with the controller is going to wear off in, quote, 30 minutes.
30 whole minutes, wow.
At the same time, he says he thinks game controllers are too complicated. He said his 14-year-old daughter thinks the 360's controller is too complicated and that Microsoft may be working on a more simple controller for the 360.
Who says may? Microsoft may be building a rocket and sending it to the moon.
Yeah, well, the story showed up on 1UP and then Peter Moore said they might be doing it. And then Microsoft felt the need to clarify further to say the exact same thing that Peter Moore said, that they are working on things, but nothing is concrete. So, I don't know, it seems like almost a confirmation that Microsoft would sort of deny it, but say the exact same thing in denying it that Peter Moore said when he denied it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just really retarded. You've already released the system. You've already seen the controller. He obviously didn't focus test the Xbox 360 with his 14-year-old daughter before it was released, and I guess who can blame him? I don't think that 13-year-old girls are the main target audience for the Xbox 360.
No, it's college guys.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're obviously trying to expand their audience. They're going for it with the Viva Pinata, with getting Rare. Rare's going to be doing their cute and furry, not their not so much of their hardcore image now for at least maybe a year or two.
Well, that's why they were bought, really.
Yeah. So where does this put us? There's maybe a simple controller that will work for what, like some games.
My guess.
It'll work.
My guess would be. And it seems the only obvious thing that would work is that it'd be a simple controller for games that are on the Xbox Live Arcade, sort of like the classic controller we're seeing for the Wii.
Yeah, well, there is that limitation that Chris Kohler alerted us of, which is that in order for an Xbox Live game to, or an Xbox Live Arcade game to be, to exist at all, it has to be under, what, 500 megabytes?
64 megs.
Because it has to fit on a memory card.
It was either 64 or 512 megs, I forget.
Okay, something small.
Yeah.
So it prevents it from being a large game.
Well, it doesn't really prevent it from being a large game. It just prevents it from being, I guess, a really big 3D game with lots of textures and that kind of stuff. But it could be a very large 2D game.
It could be a really nice-looking PS-style game or N64 game in terms of its polygon count. But that, even then, very limited. It would have to be along the lines of the arcade stuff, and it's going to use this simple controller. What are they really trying to accomplish with this? I don't know. I just think it's futile. I think that the best thing for them to do is to, if they're going to release a simple controller, to make it a standard and start making big games for it, not just arcade. That's what I would say.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to see that. I think what they want to do is the idea of that the Xbox Live Arcade is that they want to sort of use it to extend out of the Xbox's core demographic and get other people, which is, I guess, sort of Nintendo's same strategy, except Nintendo's doing it with their entire console. But Microsoft wants to pick up a couple bucks here and there from your mother who's going to play Uno on Xbox Live Arcade while you're not using it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I don't mind the 360 controller. Of course, I'm a gamer, but I don't care. I like that. I think it's a really good controller. So really, the simplification of it, to me, the Wii controller is complicated. I don't know who's talking about simplifying. As soon as you plug in that nunchuck attachment, it is a complicated controller. And I don't see simple as being the protocol for Nintendo. I don't think that's why they're doing it.
I think Nintendo has got like a couple tentacles reaching out with the Wii where it can be very simple where, you know, to the point where tennis is literally you just swing the remote. But it can also be complicated for people who want complicated games. And I think that's a good idea where even though it can play simple games, it can play them without the controller looking complicated. Like, it doesn't always look like that with the nunchuck attached. You only attach it if you need it there, and if it's not there, it looks very approachable.
Yes, I agree. And I think that that's what makes it... Obviously, Zelda, we were able to play that in a practically a GameCube setup with the nunchuck attachment. That shows how complex it can be. And in fact, I thought it was more complex than playing it on the GameCube. So really with that, knowing that, I don't see it as a simple controller. You're right, it's the capability towards simplicity. And for them to say, okay, we're going to make a simpler controller for the Live Arcade, that doesn't sell me. That doesn't sell me as being a Nintendo fan. Viva Pinata, as a Nintendo fan, as a former Rare fan, kind of gets me a little excited.
That game just looks creepy as hell to me. It represents one of those things I really don't like, but is completely, I guess, cemented in today's marketing to children culture, is that you don't just make a TV show, you know, or you don't just make a video game. It's tied in cross, like, seven medias at the same time, where you can go to the website and go in, you know, the virtual chat room kind of thing, where you can walk around the world and chat to other people. You can play the video game. You can you got to watch the TV show, you know? And I guess they were doing that back when we were kids in the 80s, where, you know, you could watch G.I. Joe and buy the action figure. But it wasn't anything beyond that. And I guess they were doing it. That wasn't their plan at the time, but now it just seems so much larger, where it's all at the same time, where, you know, Pokemon is a TV show, a video game, a card game, you know, there's books, there were movies, there's a theme park,
there's movies.
And they're building another one in, I think it was Korea. It's just this giant mass media thing.
It's the Pokemon syndrome. It's taking what kids are consumers without a moral check. Kids are the reason that it's fun to collect things in kids' games is because kids want everything.
Yep.
Kids are selfish. And that's the way it was. You know, I've talked before about how my friend and I, we only had two versions of Pokemon Red. Well, you can imagine how upset I was that I wasn't able to get all the Pokemon with someone else's copy of Blue, and I think someone eventually loaned it to me so I could. And that was the point. So with collecting on a gameplay level, that's why it's fun to collect everything else. The toys, the TV shows, everything.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Absolutely. So anyways, that's enough of a topic. Another very important news item for the past couple weeks was that the DS Lite is selling faster than hotcakes. In fact, I actually saw a hotcake salesman go out of business because there were so many DS Lites being sold. 136,000 units in 2 days.
Yeah.
A very impressive number.
That's pretty crazy.
And I'll go and tell you what. I mean, I don't have one yet because I don't have as many games, new games that I want to play on my DS, but it's happening in a couple weeks for me. Mike, of course, you've already had yours since you imported it.
Yeah.
So when I played it at E3, when I was playing TYP's, that's Michael Cole's copy, that unit is nice, and people just have to take a look at it, but it really raises the question, is it really that big of a jump? On the forums, they're talking a lot about the jump from the Game Boy Advance to the Game Boy SP was huge, but it's not selling as much. That didn't sell as much as the DS Lite over the DS, which is not as huge of a jump. What do you think?
I can see that. I think a lot of it is that, because the DS Lite is very attractive, but it's certainly not a quantum leap. There's no paradigm shift in, oh, my screen is now protected kind of thing, oh, my screen now doesn't completely suck kind of thing. It's, you know, the DS's screen is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And the Game Boy Advance, I know there was a great Penny Arcade comic about needing a piece of the sun in your living room in order to have enough light to play the original Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it's not really a quantum leap or a paradigm shift, but it's certainly fantastic. And like you said, if you see it, if you're a DS owner and you see it, that definitely increases your chances of wanting it, because that thing is amazing. But it's not a big shift. It's nice to have it, but if you could wait a little while to get it, or if you just really don't play your DS a lot of people are just going to skip it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I didn't want one until I saw it at E3, until I got to see everybody playing it, and I turned it on to just the second brightest setting, and I played Game Boy Advance games. Mm-hmm. I played Johnny's copy of Phantasy Star, and I was like, wow! This is impressive. And then, you know, with the really colorful games, stuff like Oenden and stuff like that, it was a treat.
It works really well with dark games too, though. Like Castlevania: Dawn of Sorrow, I popped that in. Looks amazing.
I'll bet I didn't get to see that, but I'll definitely be popping it in once I get one.
Yeah, and they said something like Super or New Super Mario Brothers sales doubled over the previous week, and their sales of Brain Age had tripled over the previous week with the launch of the DS Lite.
Wow.
That seems like, I don't know, a lot of marketing hoopla. Brain Age has been out for a while now, so of course people just getting the system are going to pick up that game because they've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there was a lot of marketing for Father's Day. There's a lot of people who were who just because they know that it's a good game and the system's cheaper than the DS was when it first was released, $130, and you can get Brain Age for free at Circuit City.
Not anymore,
so,
though.
Not anymore, but because of all of that, I can see why Brain Age is certainly selling a lot more.
Yeah, it's a very good point about getting free copies. That definitely was a factor in that, triple sales thing.
Yeah, if they included that, may not have, but if they did.
Oh, they must have. They count every SKU sold.
I think it's pretty clear that this is the age of the DS. I think that with the advent of the DS Lite, the advent, I say the advent as though it's a religious occurrence, with the coming of our savior, the DS Lite, we have, I think really that it's been pretty clear with the amount of sales, the amount of people who are talking about it and who are loving it. And I see this around all the time. I have some friends who said, I'll never play handheld games. It's just not my thing. But they went and bought DS Lites. I think that this is the time.
Nintendo's putting a lot of push behind this, too. I heard that some guy posted on the Gaming Edge forums about he lives in Italy, and he said that you never see video game ads anywhere in Italy, but they were covering the subways with Brain Age ads in Italy. Yeah, so they're really putting a push, you know, worldwide over this thing. I think DS Lite is going to do a huge Christmas this year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to it because that just means that we're going to see another 2 or 3 great years of games, at least 2.
Yep.
And then it'll start to move off for a while as we see, you know, interactivity between it and Wii, if they don't screw it up like they did before with connectivity with the...
Well, you don't need cables.
You don't need cables, you don't have to buy any extra attachments, and the features should hopefully be much better, like downloading DS demos, if that does
happen.
Yeah,
that's worth it alone.
Worth it. So yeah, so now we're going to move on to our reader mail. And we got a letter from Retroman, which is kind of an odd question, but I thought it was one worth answering. Will the GameCube Kuren Kuren ever make a PAL or NTSC or US release? And I think that we can answer the question very simply by saying...
Well, I think first we should explain that Kuru Kuru Kuren was this Japanese game that I think there may have been a couple before, but the first time I heard of it was when it released with the Game Boy Advance. I imported it along with my import GBA.
Oh, really?
And it's that game with the spinning stick it's very much like Irritating Stick. It's the game with the spinning stick and you have to move it through a maze. And at one point, a couple years ago, there was a version released for the GameCube, and I assume that's what Retroman is asking.
Yeah, and I remember that. I remember that it was, for some reason, advertised in Nintendo Power, or not advertised, but they had features on it, and they, I guess, to try and test the buzz to see if anybody cared.
Mm-hmm. And I know the sequel was released on the Game Boy. The Game Boy sequel was released in Europe, but not America.
Mm-hmm. And then there was also the PlayStation game that was very similar, called Irritating Stick, that was released only on the PlayStation, but it did come to America. So that, you know, considering all of those things, it's kind of odd that Kuru Kuru Kuren is never going to come to the U.S. Because
never.
Not only is it incredibly old, and not only is, you know, we're talking about GameCube, a system that is on its last dying legs, it's a dog with wheels attached. The GameCube is not going to see this oddball import game. It's not going to be worth the effort to localize. It's not going to be however long that would take. It's not going to be worth it for them. But that doesn't exclude the possibilities, considering it's such a simple game, that we may see it across your fingers, along with a game like, say, Sin and Punishment, on the Wii's Virtual Console.
Don't get them excited about Sin and Punishment, because I don't think that's ever going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen?
No. Bottom line right now is if Retroman, if you want to play Kuru Kuru on your GameCube, you should either mod it or get a freeloader and import it.
Okay, but my hopes are up for Sin and Punishment. What are you doing dashing my hopes?
No, I don't think it stands a chance of coming out over here.
I don't understand.
I just don't see why they would put the effort into it. I don't know.
Well, it's already
That's
in
just
English,
me.
Except for the menus.
Yeah, I guess, but maybe it'll happen, but... Maybe
come
not.
On, Mike. You're just
we have
being
yet to
negative.
We have yet to see how long it takes to, you know, recode a game to get it running on the Wii. And if it didn't sell well enough in Japan,
it's
they probably
emulation.
Won't even bother.
They even said that.
I guess it could happen.
Mike,
you're I'm not getting my hopes up because if I get them up, they'll just be dashed.
You're really, I mean, now I'm depressed. You just kind of did it to me there. Okay, I'm gonna move on to something.
No, I'll cheer you up.
You're gonna cheer me up. Okay.
I'm gonna cheer you up. We could talk about Super Paper Mario. How's about that?
What? We could talk about Super Paper Mario? Oh wait, am I gonna tell me that's not gonna be released in the U.S.?
Oh, that's definitely coming out.
I forgot.
If you haven't seen
Super Paper Mario,
if you haven't seen this video yet, there's a video up on YouTube that a PGC reader sent it in. There's a link to it on PGC. If you check our news section, it's a video of Mario fighting this massive dragon boss in the desert.
That looks awesome.
Wow.
It looks awesome. It looks like it's got this sly combination between retro and new and fresh.
And what I noticed specifically was that when the boss appears, like a little mouse cursor shows up on the screen and draws a couple boxes, and then the boss like appears inside those little boxes.
Really? Interesting.
More like square. They're squares because everything is two-dimensional. Uh-huh.
And also, that's also the graphical element that brings you from 2D to 3D, as was noted by Michael Cole in the preview, is that a little mouse appears, draws a box around him, and then he's redrawn in a new perspective as the camera shifts. And it does appear to be true that you do it on the fly, as we were told at E3. To me, the video just shows that the gameplay has limitless potential, because it's still going to have everything that we love about a 2D platformer, everything that we're going to love about platforming in a Mario world, with just this... It's just pushing it just a little bit, just saying, okay, I'm going to let you go just a little bit more into a 3D perspective, and with that, you'll be able to get countless other things. If you imagine an awesome game like Super Mario Brothers 3 or Super Mario World, depending on which one's your favorite, or Yoshi's Island, and how there was just it just seemed like they had a fresh idea every level, that's the way that Intelligent Systems is going to be handling this.
Touch fuzzy, get dizzy.
Amen, brother. Amen. Yeah, that's the way I feel about this. I think this is going to be everything retro that you like, combined with the incredible innovation. I hate to say innovation. Really, it's just quirk. It's really just a quirky idea to say, well, let's try it.
Well, it looks like a blast.
It really does. I can't. I mean, I hate to just be riding the hype machine. I mean, I'm really what I'm doing is I'm fueling the hype machine with the spit that's coming out of my mouth as I rave on the streets. But I really do believe that this is going to be the ultimate gaming experience in anybody's life. Every single person.
That's a very wonderful experience.
Do you think that's too much?
I don't know. It could be close. Certainly much better than our last story of the week. This happened about a week ago. I know we probably would have talked about this on last week's podcast, but UA Boll, world-famous director of films such as House of the Dead and Blood Rain, and if you haven't seen it yet, there's now a trailer up for his new movie, In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Adventure.
You're kidding, right? I didn't even hear that.
Oh, yeah. This guy gets the most amazing talent in his films somehow. He has... Oscar winner Ben Kingsley is in Blood Rain. And actually, my roommate has a Netflix, and it's coming tomorrow. Our favorite thing to do with UA Boll movies is they're really terrible, but you have to watch them. And then after that, you have to watch them with the commentary track, because his commentary tracks are the funniest things on the planet. He thinks he's the greatest director. He's so high on himself. He compares on the commentary track for House of the Dead, he compares his movie to a couple of classic films. He mentions at one point that it is much like Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America, but with zombies.
You're kidding.
He compares a scene where, like, you know, the guy kisses the girl, whatever. Mm-hmm. He compares that to Gone with the Wind. And there's a very quick reference to Schindler's List at some point.
Oh, man.
Oh, it... That one put me on the floor, like, really? Are you kidding me? Spielberg's Holocaust epic you are comparing to your piece of crap? And at one point on the House of the Dead commentary, he takes a phone call from Christian Slater. I guess he forgot to put his phone off, and I guess they were doing pre-production on Alone in the Dark at the time, because Christian Slater was in that wonderful gem. But anyway, U-Boll, knowing how much, I guess he hears a lot of the flack that people give him, he has challenged his critics. And he has said, if you have written two bad reviews of his films in b- in the year 2005, and you are a male between 140 and 190 pounds, he will fight you. he has challenged people to send an email in, you know, saying and linking them to the qualified articles, which can even be as simple as message board posts.
Wow.
And he will send you an email back. My roommate, who is a writer for 1UP.com right now and also posts a lot on the Gaming Age forums, sent an email in.
Oh, really?
And today he got one back.
What did it say?
It asked that, it said that I guess they wanted more information on him. They wanted his height, since that was not asked for originally, and a picture of him. And what they're going to do is they're going to pick five people, they're going to fly you to Vancouver, and you get to go 10 rounds with Yue Bull.
Okay, no. This is not a fighting contest. If they're asking for a photo, this is obviously Yue Bull is trying to find a lifelong companion. I think it's very clear that Yue Bull is lonely because he makes such bad movies.
And he's not making enough money to pay for eHarmony.com, so...
Yeah, so he said, I'll make it a competition, the hottest guy between the ages between the weight of 140 and 190, who's got the cutest face and is well-built, who thinks he can take me in a fight. Yeah, okay.
Well, you know, that might make sense, because there's no prize.
Oh, there's no prize.
The only prize is that if you win, you have the pride that you beat the crap out of UA Bowl and the respect of the entire video gaming community.
Is he going to fight all five of them?
I guess. I don't know. Maybe he'll fight them until one of them takes him down.
But see, I would be afraid. I would not want to put so much confidence in myself that I would be able to fight five guys in a row.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's one per day. I don't know. You know, there's no details, but it's going to be amazing.
And not to mention that the selection process is totally skewed because they get to pick. They're going to pick someone like one of those guys who runs his own website, who writes like little geeky movie reviews that just points out all the errors and the differences between the films and the games.
Maybe. I don't know. All I know is that Something Awful's Low Tax made it to the next round, so
that would be
fantastic. And I really hope my roommate makes it. He's got the 1UP cred behind his name, so maybe that'll put him high enough on the list to, you know, fight Mr. Bull. He says if he gets accepted, he's going to start training every day, and I guess we can do periodic updates on the podcast about that.
That would be so great. But it's not too late, Mike. It's not too late for you and I to quickly fake some old bad movie reviews on PGC.
Yeah, but I'm not between 140 and 190.
Well, I'm actually neither am I.
I'm just under by about 5 or 10 pounds, depending on what week it is.
I must weigh the exact same thing as you because I'm under the weight as well. But you know, I could probably bulk up. I mean, I would lose because I hear Yue Bull is a scrapper. But if he's, I think it would be just great to know that I got punched in the face by a bad director. I mean, okay, here's the thing: Orson Welles would never have done this. No, and nor would have Victor Fleming, director of Gone with the Wind, nor would have Steven Spielberg. No one defends
Sergio Leone.
Their movies. Well, Sergio Leone might have if he got drunk enough, but no one defends their movies by saying, "Come fight me, and I'll prove to you that I made a good movie."
Like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, if he beats you, somehow he's vindicated, and House of the Dead no longer sucks.
he's going to stand up there, and he's going to, you know what he's going to do is he's going to give the winners copies of all of his movies on DVD. That's what I think it's going to be. If someone wins, he's like, well, hey, I mean, you beat me. You proved that my movies suck, but here you go, free copies. That's what's going to happen.
Next week on the podcast, I will definitely give you an update if there is one, and I will give you my own personal review of Blood Rain after we watch it and with the commentary track, which is an absolute must. And is even if you saw these movies and you hated them, or if you dismissed these movies because you knew they would suck, I'm begging you to go to Blockbuster or put at least one of these films on your Netflix queue and watch it with the commentary. If you're over the age of 21, I highly suggest you imbibe some alcohol before or during the process. You can make a drinking game of it, like perhaps take a shot whenever he compares himself to a master director.
And during the movie, you can just take a shot anytime that something idiotic happens or that you just you cannot stop laughing.
Take a drink every time there's a continuity error, you'll be drunk. Even if you're only drinking beer and sipping it every time there's a continuity error, you'll be drunk pretty quick.
That's so funny. I cannot believe that he's going to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, more power to them. And I think that, you know, personally, I believe that eventually one day we will actually see movies based on video games that are good. I really think it's going to happen.
Well, there's those rumors flying around. There's rumors flying around that right now that Steven Spielberg might be doing a World of Warcraft movie. I don't believe it. It's from some, like, BS. Some guy wrote it on his blog thing. But
why would you
happen.
Do a World of Warcraft movie? Why wouldn't you just do a Warcraft movie? You should just do Warcraft. You should say Warcraft.
Well, that's what it would be in the end, but they'd probably call it World of Warcraft to tie in with the huge brand.
Okay, sure. And also I heard Peter Jackson was going to be making a Halo film.
Yeah, that's just according to IMDb, so who knows?
Well, and I'm tended to believe it because I know that Peter Jackson is the big video game fan.
Yes. And he would be a good choice.
Yeah, and I think that that would be fine. Halo is a good enough property that it doesn't need anything really exceptional that beyond some good craftsmanship. I think that with King Kong, Peter Jackson proves that he is really more devoted to making a well-crafted action film than anything of any true significance, despite what the Academy Awards say about Lord of the Rings. So that's why Halo, yeah, I think I'd like to see that movie. So
as long as Bob Hoskins doesn't play Master Chief.
What, and John Leguizamo as one of his underlings?
Cortana.
I'm all for it. Co-starring, we'll have Dennis Hopper and that chick as well.
Dennis Hopper as the
Flood.
Covenant hive mind. As the Flood, yes.
Just,
as the voice of the Flood or something.
The voice of the...
As the voice of that giant creepy plant thing that holds the Covenant guy and Master Chief
okay. Down
in the down in the abyss, Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, yeah, but Dennis Hopper would be like, "Yeah, man, oh, man, I got you guys, and I'm trapped, and you're kidnapped," and it would be ridiculous.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be worth it, or maybe it would be the best thing ever.
Maybe, but I guess we'll have to find out another time because this is going to bring us to the end of this week's Radio Free Nintendo. I've been Mike Sklenz. My co-host is Evan Birchfield. If you have any questions, comments. Especially listener mail. We love listener mail. Please send it to podcast@planetgamecube.com, and we will see you again next week.
So long.